Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on drought in America when we come back. The genocidal policy of Global 2000 and the New World Order are the greatest threats to our lives, our liberties, and our property since Noah's flood. And now our national leaders have subscribed to a plan created by the Club of Rome, the United Nations, the Trilateral Commission, and a whole host and plethora of other lesser policy-making think tanks to reduce the Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years. Now, that didn't stutter. That's correct. It's 90% population reduction over the next 50 years. That's the plan. That's why I contend that we ought not to delude ourselves into believing that we're going to stop all of these mad scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians in their insane scheme to enslave the world and impose a worldwide tyranny upon all of us, a new world order. But you and I don't have to participate in our own demise. We don't have to help them. We don't have to finance them. Nor do we need stand helplessly by and do nothing either. That's why I contend that it's time that you and I wise up and start listening more to the God of Israel and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians. And let's prepare to live through and let's survive this global 2000, this New World Order nightmare. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package first. That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, my subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to the website georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine when you get there. Send an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about drought. Did you know that weather, climate, whether it rains too much, it's dry, it's humid, it's dry, it's affecting your health? Yeah, that's a fact. Now, in 1897, the editor and essayist Charles Dudley Warner was his name. He observed that everybody talks about the weather, but no one does anything about it. You've probably heard that claim or that cute little story or that little tale, that little cliche. Everybody talks about the weather, but no one does anything about it. Well, more than a century later, weather remains a major topic of daily discussion, but increasingly scientists are trying to use weather and climate data to project disease patterns and formulate actions or action steps to prevent or minimize the adverse effects on human health. Now, to appreciate the major impact that weather can have on our daily lives, one need only consider 1999. Early in that year, 1999, the worst dry spell on record scourged much of the east coast of the United States. Later in the year, some areas of the country, including parts of the drought-ravaged East Coast, experienced the opposite end of the weather spectrum, heavy rains and record flooding. Frequent media reports throughout the year have focused on the plight of American farmers, county water departments, or insurance companies struggling with drought, floods, and other consequences of inclement weather. Now, it's more than just a feeling, although most of us realize on a very personal level that weather affects the way we feel. A growing body of scientific evidence is confirming this hunch. Increasingly, researchers are using weather and climate predictions as a compass to track health trends and to develop preventative measures. Using principles of epidemiology, meteorology, and physiology, they're examining the influence of weather and climate on health. The objectives of this fairly new science of biometeorology are threefold. First, on a very large scale, biometeorologists look at the relationship between atmospheric patterns around the world, changes in climate, and the effects on health patterns. Second, they examine on a smaller scale the effects of weather patterns on localities. And then third, they track how weather affects individual health. So here's what we know. From a global perspective, there is good cause to contemplate the relationship between health and weather. Indeed, a number of nations, recognizing the potentially huge impact of global climate changes on human health, designated the 1990s as the International Decade for Natural Disaster Reduction. This action recognized that some populations are more vulnerable than others to the consequences of weather and climate. So while many suspected links between meteorologic occurrences and human health await scientific confirmation, some linkages are already fairly well defined. And here are some examples. A U-shaped relationship between mortality and temperature has been observed. Except in equatorial regions, mortality increases as temperatures reach cold or warm extremes. Historically, periods of rapid social change, such as the one we're now experiencing, have been accompanied by reemergence of infectious diseases, also a current occurrence. Social and economic disparities, ecological issues, and global climate changes can be identified as contributing factors. As ambient temperature increases, so do food-borne disease and rodent and pest populations, which cause more illness. Warmer, drier weather in the northern hemisphere and wetter weather in tropical climates is predicted, leading to lower or different crop yields, more hunger, and increased disease. And then there's ideal ambient temperature for humans, which ranges from 38 to 77 degrees Fahrenheit. Through time, major heat waves have occurred approximately every 310 years, and scientists now expect that frequency to increase to every 5 to 6 years. By the year 2020, summer mortality is expected to increase significantly, and winter mortality is expected to increase slightly. I want to pause here and make a couple of comments. Let's take, for instance, drought in Africa. Well, it makes sense. You have a drought, you have lower crop yields, and you have a higher incidence of famine. Right now in northern Africa, over in the Sudan, you have famine. It isn't caused just, particularly by political events, although political events do play a huge role in mortality. But what we're discovering here is this, that the weather has a direct impact upon your health. When it's warmer and more moist, it encourages bacteria to grow. When it's drier, then less bacteria grow. Hence, we have an increase in infectious diseases when it becomes wetter, warmer, and more moist, and less infectious disease when it becomes drier, less moist. less bacteria. Now, these are cause and effect relationships. Now, the question arises, well, who's causing this? Is it just happenstance? That's what evolutionists tell us. It's just chance. It's just the way the cookie crumbles. On the other hand, if we were to look into the Bible and we looked at the penal clause chapters, Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, and then combine those with Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21, we see a pattern emerging. We see a cause and effect relationship occurring. We see somebody who is taking a direct hand and causing these events. That's what we call Bible prophecy. Now, Bible prophecy is not a good guess. We have prophets. We go through the checkout line at the supermarket, and I'm looking here at these papers. You know, there'll be the National Enquirer and Globe and a couple others, and they make predictions. California is going to fall off into the ocean or some other great, grandiose prediction. That's a guess. So far, their guessing hasn't been very good. And then we have Bible prophecy. And in the Bible, God says that He has the power to make these events occur. I can make it happen. Now, that's what real Bible prophecy is all about. So when we get to the book of Revelation and we see a prophecy in Revelation 11, for instance, about two witnesses, He says, I'm going to bring two people, two witnesses on the world scene. These two witnesses are going to do certain things over a certain period of time. When you see that event transpire, remember that you heard it first right here. Well, you heard it second right here. I got it from God in Revelation 11. I didn't think that up myself. So remember, you got it second right here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. But you won't know it unless somebody told you in advance that it was going to occur. Because if you'd never heard it and it occurred, then you would say, well, it occurred and then you told me about it. That's because you observed it. So what we're talking about here in prophecy is we're going to read the prophecy, and then we're going to sit back and wait. And if it comes to pass, then we'll know that a real prophet has spoken. If it doesn't come to pass, we'll know it's just another false prophet, there has been a number of them, and they're without end. They're everywhere. You can read about them in the National Enquirer. Now, going on, he says, if climate changes do cause more frequent, more intense weather extremes, more and better weather data will be necessary for response planning and education. For localities planning for weather and climate-related challenges is essential, and it will become even more so over the next few decades, especially in northern cities such as Pittsburgh, Detroit, Chicago, and New York. Climate-related mortality is high. Research estimates indicate that 20% of humans are weather-sensitive or particularly prone to the ill effects of weather extremes, with the elderly being disproportionately stressed. Additionally, climate changes lead to population migration, causing changes in societal composition, economic profiles, and employment pools. Let me pause here and make an observation. You'll notice that when there is a heat wave, more and more people die from the heat. And when there's extreme cold, you find more and more people die from the extreme cold. And you say, well, it doesn't affect me because I live in a house, I have air conditioning, and I have heat. Well, when you're taking a look at the whole population, not everybody lives in a house. Not everybody has air conditioning. Not everybody has access to the same heat. Now, take a look at fuel bills. Have you noticed that your fuel bills up in the Northeast are a lot higher, 50% higher than they were last year? Well, what that means is that some people who can't afford to pay that 50% more are going to be colder this winter. And if they're colder this winter, then they're going to develop some kind of a reaction to it. They may develop the flu and die from the flu. Nobody's going to say, God, this guy died from a weather extreme. No. his death certificate's going to say he died from some pneumonia or flu related disease. He had some lung infection. Now, same thing happens with AIDS. Not very many people die from AIDS. They die from the complications which was caused by AIDS. So in America, they're telling us now that AIDS-related deaths or deaths from AIDS is on the decrease. We're getting the upper hand on AIDS. AIDS is going wild every place else in the world, but not in the United States. Or is it that the people in the United States aren't dying from AIDS, they're dying from pneumonia. Or they're dying from some other disease. They get the AIDS, which weakens their immune systems, and then their immune system, being unable to fight off the flu, the guy dies from the flu. And we say, well, now look at that. See, AIDS is on a decrease and flu is on the increase. So go out and get another flu shot. I don't know, I mentioned in the last program, we Americans don't seem to be able to face reality and solve problems the way we used to in the past. Used to be in America, when we had a problem, we just solved it. So when the governor of Montana sees a problem, that is fuel, we've got to have more oil, more fuel, he says, okay, there's a technology at $60 a barrel. We can use the technology that the Germans used in World War II, and we can solve our problem. I mentioned to you last time, that'll be a cold day in hell. You can rest assured that the Federal Reserve and the major oil companies are not going to allow that to happen. Congress and the President are not going to allow that to happen. It's a tragedy, but the people of America can't put two and two together any longer. There was a time when we were able to do that. Now we're living in an era when we're unable to figure that out. Which is why I'm bringing this to your attention. Did you know that the weather affects your health? So if you're turning your thermostat down in Boston, it could well be that the lower temperatures this winter, and combined with the fact that you're 75 years old, is going to give you a flu disease or pneumonia for which you will die that nobody is going to blame on the weather. They're going to blame it on the flu. But if it hadn't been for the change in the weather, you might have lived to be 80 or 85 years old. But you're not going to live to be 85 because you're going to die at 75 because of the weather. So let's tuck it away in our hearts. The repercussions of weather for individuals go beyond merely feeling blue or rainy or overcast days or the ability, whether it's real or perceived, to predict storms on the basis of joint pain. Although many weather-related health afflictions are common coffee break topics, considerable information about subtle effects of weather and climate are now emerging. Now, many people may not realize that the terms weather and climate are not interchangeable. So when we talk about weather versus climate, those are not synonymous terms. Climate refers to the weather pattern over a long period of time in a specific area. Weather is the actual state of affairs outside the window at any given point in time. Climate suppresses or expands the range of many diseases, and weather contributes to the timing and the intensity of disease outbreaks. Thus, in the context of disease, climate provides motive and weather provides opportunity. Now, certain weather phenomena have global effects, and we're only now starting to understand. One such phenomenon we call the El Niño effect, or more accurately, the El Niño Southern Oscillation. It's called the ENSO, the El Niño Southern Oscillation. So as you hear me mention ENSO as we go through the article here, keep in mind that it's called the El Niño Southern Oscillation. We're talking about the El Niño effect that we have now hung a label on. It's like cancer, or heart disease, or stroke. Time was when a fella just fell over dead. And we would sit there and say, my God, old Hank just fell over dead. Now we perform an autopsy and we find out that he had a brain aneurysm, and so we say, oh, he had a stroke. Old Hank died from a stroke. Makes us all feel real good. Hank's just as dead. But we've got a label that we can hang on his malady. And that's where we are now with this El Nino Southern Oscillation effect. You see, in the past, we just had droughts or floods. And we just said, wow, we just don't know what's causing this upset in the weather. Now we know. It's El Nino. We can hang a label on it. The Pacific Ocean is warmer down off the coast of South America by 2 or 3 degrees than it was 5 years ago. And that changes the weather patterns in Mississippi and Alabama. And so now we can hang a label on this. Well, it also has some health effects. This weather phenomenon produces periodic short-term weather changes once every 5 years or so on average. And so, remember El Nino, emanates from the Pacific Ocean, and it was named by Peruvian and Ecuadorian fishermen who noticed periodic changes in their catch of anchovies, which are very sensitive to water temperature changes. As the seas warmed, the anchovy catch would decline. Fishermen noticed that the warming effect peaked around Christmas, so they chose the term El Nino, Spanish for the Christ Child. Specifically, it is a change in prevailing winds resulting in unusually warm sea water. Sea surface temperatures, also known as SST, increases, and with atmospheric interaction causes changes in movement of air masses and associated cold or warm fronts. Let me pause here and bring another point to your attention. Remember, it's my contention here that these warmer or cooler periods are being caused. Science wants to tell us that these are being caused by random chance. We don't know what it is. It's just happening. And I want to tell you that I think that it's being caused by a supernatural person, a guy that we commonly call God, who's doing this to fulfill Bible prophecy. So we have these two competing theories. My theory is that El Nino is caused by God from time to time to fulfill the prophecies that he gave us in Leviticus 26, Deuteronomy 28, Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21. And without doing that, you can't fulfill those prophecies which say, I am going to take the rain in due season away from you. Now that's what he told Moses. He said, I'm going to give you rain in due season. You obey me and keep my commandments, and you're not going to have Hurricane Katrina's, and you're not going to have drought in the Missouri River Basin and in the Colorado River Basin. Now give me the finger and don't practice my laws, breach my contract, breach my covenant, and I'm going to give you drought. Or I'm going to blast you with a Hurricane Katrina. Now in order for those prophecies to come to pass, he's going to have to interfere. Now, how is he doing that? Science comes forward and says he's warming the ocean. Well, last year, the temperature of the Gulf of Mexico was 6 degrees. Is that the number? 6 degrees warmer than normal. And boy, did we have a couple of doozies. In fact, the strongest hurricane, Velma, the strongest hurricane ever recorded in history, occurred after Hurricane Katrina. And it hit Cancun, Mexico, and then it missed the United States. Remember, it went, I don't know, was it over southern Florida, or did it go down and miss? I think it missed Florida altogether. But it was the strongest hurricane, had the lowest barometric pressure because of that rise in sea temperature. So now the scientists come along and say, well, we know what causes these stronger hurricanes. It's warmer Gulf of Mexico temperatures, warmer ocean temperatures. Now they come to us and they say, listen, we know why we're getting drought and floods worldwide around the world. We know that it's El Nino. Well, okay. Now, how are we going to control that? How are we going to stop that? What does it take to stop this El Nino effect? What does it take to stop Hurricane Katrina's? All right, now, let me tell you. It's obedience to the Ten Commandments. That's what we have to do to stop Hurricane Katrina. Now, the scientist comes along and he says, okay, here's what we have to do to stop Hurricane Katrina. We got to stop driving automobiles. We got to stop generating electricity. We've got to shut down our power plants and freeze to death in the dark at home because we can't travel someplace else to freeze to death in the dark. That's the solution that Al Gore and the environmentalists are offering us. They say what we need is biodiesel. But when you do the math, there isn't enough land to produce the biomass to produce the diesel to run our cars. I mean, that's just where reality's at. Now, let me tell you one more little factor. There's no energy shortage in the United States. There's an energy crisis, all right, but there's no energy shortage. Here's why. Out in the western United States, we Americans are sitting on top of 3.6 trillion barrels of oil. Did you know that? 3.6 trillion barrels. We've got almost as much oil in this country as you Canadians have. You know that? Almost. Not quite, but almost. Yeah, 3.6 trillion barrels. Do you know how much oil that is? That's enough oil to run the United States and all of our needs in this country for 666 years at today's current consumption. In addition to that, we have enough coal in this country, primarily in the same western states, that we could make, that we could run our coal-fired power plants, we can use all the coal that we're using today, and we could produce all of the gasified coal to run our, do the same thing, take the place of oil for another 666 years. We've got as much coal as we do, what do they call that stuff out there in the West? I'll think of the name here in a minute. It's not the tar sands that you have up in Alberta. It's another thing. And they use a term here. It's called tertiary recovery. Tertiary recovery. I'll think of the name and I'll mention it in a minute. That's how much we got. But it can only be produced at about $30 a barrel. And now the price of oil is $60 a barrel. It becomes economical. So Governor Schweitzer says, let's solve our problem right now. Boy, that's a dreamer. I mentioned that to you last time. That isn't going to happen. But I'm just pointing out, we could solve that problem, but we're not going to. And we could solve this global warming problem, but we're not going to. And that's kind of a tragedy. Because you see, those of us that are sitting over here saying, God, I'd like to solve that problem. Well, boys and girls, you can solve that problem for you. You just can't solve that problem for everybody else. So let me recommend that you solve that problem for yourself and your family. And the rest of the world is going to suffer the consequences of it. Now, that's the purpose behind Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. They're called the Penal Clause Statutes, not for no good reason. They're called the Penal Clause Statutes because you break my covenant, you violate the terms and conditions of the contract, you pay that penalty. And the guy that breaks the contract pays the penalty, the guy that doesn't break the contract doesn't pay the penalty. It's just that simple. And let me give you a reminder here, and we'll be back with more on weather and climate and how it influences our health. You're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School and asking for it. That number, 417-273-4967. That's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, back to drought in the United States. Now we're beginning to find out through science, God bless them, not all science is bad by any stretch of the imagination. Remember, science can solve our energy-dependent problem on Middle East oil by simply producing oil out of coal here in the United States. We have the ability to solve the problem, we just don't have the political will to accomplish the goal. At the turn of the century, we had the political will to solve the water problem in San Francisco, and we did that. Now we have a political solution. It's destroy the dam and produce water from some other source at the very same time that we're engaged in the worst drought in the western United States in history. Can you believe it? The solutions are available, but we're not only not going to avail ourselves of the solutions, we are going to destroy ourselves in the process of coming up with solutions that will work. I mentioned that to you last time. Biodiesel, this lady who's in opposition to Governor Schweitzer, says what we need to do is to plant Montana in corn. Plant Montana in corn in a drought? In a drought? Boys and girls, I didn't make 60 Minutes up. If you can get a copy of the 60 Minutes program, which was aired last night, which happened to be Sunday night, February the 26th, I think that it'd be well worth the $20 or $30 to get the story. Solutions are available, boys and girls, but we are not availing ourselves of the solutions. In fact, we're going in the opposite direction as rapidly as possible. It's like shooting ourselves in the foot. And so we shoot ourselves in the other foot so that we're balanced out. We're drilling holes in the other side of the Titanic in hopes that the water coming in will be balanced by the water that flows out. Okay. So now we're talking about El Nino and its health effects. Well, this ENSO, remember that's El Nino, also includes an opposite phenomenon called La Niña, which causes a decrease in SST and a similar stream of weather changes. Each El Niño has unique features and can result in drought and consequently food shortages and famine. In some areas, drought is twice as likely to occur in El Niño years. Now, I want to point out here that they tell us here in the article that when you have this El Niño effect, you never can tell where this drought's going to occur or where the floods are going to occur. Sounds like random chance to me, or it sounds like the direct actions of somebody who's in control of the weather. Now, a guy that comes along and says to you, I can give you rain in due season. You know, if I came to you people in California and I said, listen, my name is George Gordon and I can give you rain in due season. Here's the program. Would you like to buy into my program? Okay, here's program number one. You shall not have any other gods before me. I'm the chief poobah. You shall not make unto you any graven images. You shall not take my name in vain. And remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy and honor your father and mother. Hey, listen, does that sound too onerous to you? I mean, you know, you've got your gods and you got your church and 65% of you go to church every Sunday. I mean, if you can worship that God, how about worshiping a different one? And after all, remember, I'm George Gordon. I'm coming to you guys in California saying, I can give you rain in due season. There will be no more drought, and there will be no more floods. Just follow my law. You shall do no murder. Don't commit adultery. Don't steal. Don't bear false witness against your neighbor, and don't covet. 10 rules. You follow these 10 rules, and you'll get rain in due season. You know, that deal was made to your forefathers out at Mount Sinai. And your forefathers said, that sounds like a hell of a deal. We'll buy it. And they said, all that the Eternal has said, we will do and be obedient. When we got to the United States of America, our forefathers described to us, which is in buried now deep, but described to us in our history. When Lewis and Clark got out there to the headwaters of the Missouri River, they described the free-flowing water. They described the salmon in the streams. They described the forests and the grasslands. Hey, we didn't have any drought. And for about 200 years, and everything went pretty well here in this country. Things went fair to middle and well for us. And now all of a sudden we find, and science, you know, they're starting to tell us, hey, we got this global warming problem. We didn't have global warming in 1920, 1860. Well, we got it today. In fact, we need global warming. If we don't have global warming, these Bible prophecies cannot come to pass. And when the scientist tells you about El Niño and La Niña, he's simply describing to you, hanging a label on Bible prophecy. Because in order for God to give us more powerful hurricanes in the future, we've got to have warmer ocean temperatures. And boys and girls, the scientists tell us it's coming. Now, of course, these same scientists, they will tell you there is no God, so therefore the global warming isn't being caused by any gods out here. It's being caused by burning coal in power plants. Therefore, we need to shut the power plants down. Well, let me tell you, your God never told you that you had to freeze to death in the dark. Your God never told you that you had to tear your dams down. He said what you have to do is to practice my law, and I will give you rain in due season. The scientists come along and say, no, don't listen to this God with rain in due season crap. What you want to do is listen to us. And what's causing global warming is that you guys have, you're burning all this fossil fuel. We have to stop burning fossil fuel. Let me ask you this. Why did you think God put that fossil fuel into the ground? Did you think that all that coal was there for no good purpose? Did you think that all that oil, or all those tar sands, you know, up there in Canada, he put it there for no good purpose? By the way, you Canadians are sitting on, get this, 3 trillion barrels of tar sand oil, which is easily producible at $30 a barrel. At $60 a barrel, you Canadians ought to get rich. You know, you Canadians ought to make us Americans pay you in gold coin for your oil. You know that? Because if you take our worthless paper, you're going to get screwed. You're not going to get paid. So I'm just passing that along to you. We're stealing your oil. You're producing close to 1 million barrels of oil a day and selling most of it to us down here in the South. And we're giving you worthless paper for it. You Canadians up there ought to make the Americans pay you for your oil. And of course, when Saddam Hussein suggested that he stay on a gold standard and that he get paid in gold for his oil, you saw what happened in 1990, don't you? You Arabs over there, you want to get paid in gold? Well, just pay attention to what we're doing to you people in Iraq. Teach you guys a lesson. All right, here's some more pieces of a global puzzle. The greenhouse effect. It's expected to change climate. Not the weather, the climate. The greenhouse effect describes a situation where gases, primarily carbon dioxide, are trapped in the upper atmosphere and long-wave radiation increases, boosting atmospheric temperature around the Earth. This is a measurable effect. Scientists estimate that carbon dioxide concentrations were approximately 280 parts per million in 1800, but now they're about 340 parts per million. By the year 2100, they estimate concentrations could rise to as much as 2240 parts per million. Can you believe that? If actions to decrease greenhouse gas emissions are not taken soon and sustained, the outcome of increased greenhouse effect is startling. Atmospheric temperature could increase between 1.5 degrees centigrade and 4.5 degrees centigrade by 2100, resulting in sea levels of 41 to 68 centimeters higher than today. Additionally, a small change in temperature can cause huge changes in food production. Using the above temperature projections, scientists predict that the number of people worldwide who will be hungry will double by the year 2060. Well, okay, boys and girls, you can follow science or you can follow God. There's a choice to be made here. And if you want to shut your power plants down and you want to believe that greenhouse gases are caused by the burning of fossil fuels and that the problems of drought and hurricanes are being caused by us, the people on planet Earth, have at it. Don't let me get in the way of your thinking. But I want to throw out another theory. I think it's the God of heaven, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, it may well be that, coincidentally, the rise in sea temperatures and the rise of greenhouse gases are going on at the same time, but I haven't seen any evidence that tells me that carbon dioxide in the atmosphere causes warmer ocean temperatures. We see that phenomenon going on, but what we're not giving credit to is the God of Abraham who said, here's what I'm going to do to you if you don't follow my law. Now, when you take God out of the equation, the only thing you're left with is we see greenhouse gases going up in the atmosphere, which doesn't seem like a bad thing to me. After all of the plant life on the planet absorbs carbon dioxide. The plant breathes in carbon dioxide, and you and I emit carbon dioxide. There's a balance out here. Now, of course, evolutionists and scientists tell you, well, it just happened. It just caprice. And then, of course, the other side of the coin is God created it that way. That's the conclusion that I come to. That's because I'm one of these right-wing, reactionary, radical, religious fanatics. Yeah, anybody that would have a sign on his gate that says Ten Commandments on it has got to be some kind of a nut, doesn't he? Now, there was a time in America when that wouldn't have been so nutty. But today, you put the Ten Commandments on your gate, and people look at you, and they go, boy, that guy's kind of screwball. I don't go to church. I'm not one of the 65% of Americans that go to church every Sunday. I'm not one of those religious guys. But I'm some kind of a nut. By the way, let me tell you about the Ten Commandments again. I'm looking at the Ten Commandments sign. I happen to have it here in my office. Brought it in here for another purpose. And while I'm looking at it, let me give you the telephone number in case you too would like to be a right-wing reactionary religious fanatic nut with a Ten Commandments sign on your gate. They come in various sizes. I told you about the 2x3 foot size. They also come in about 8.5x11, which is just about the right size to put on your doorpost. You know, the front door coming into your house, it's called your doorpost. So I put it on my doorpost, front and back door, and then I put the Ten Commandments, the big sign out there on my gate. You can call this guy at 888-601-2345. 888-601-2345. And order them. I don't know what the price is. I forgot. Now, they're dirt cheap. I think these big signs are about $6 each. And the little signs are maybe a dollar. Hell, I'll bet you if you were to write to them and say, I'm so damn poor, I can't afford to pay you for these signs. Would you please send them to me free? I'll bet you they'd send them to you free if you're poor. But they've also got a webpage here. It's www.tencommandments.faithweb, F-A-I-T-H, W-E-B.com. www.tencommandments.faithweb.com. I hope those people have another business that they're engaged in, because if they're selling these signs, the Ten Commandments, if they're selling those signs, and if they intend to make their living making Ten Commandment signs, I can assure you they will starve to death. There isn't a snowball's chance in hell that those people can make a living selling signs that say Ten Commandments on them. None. Zero. Zilch. However, as a sideline to help them pay the cost of making the signs for those right-wing reactionary radical religious fanatics that want to put one of these signs up, 888-601-2345 is the number to call. All right, going back here to health, pieces of a global puzzle, the greenhouse effect. The butterfly effect also complicates weather and climate. This effect was described by Belgian Nobel laureate. I'm not even going to try to pronounce this guy's name. It's LLYAPRIGOGINE. God bless him. As part of his work on chaos theory, he heightened our awareness that under some circumstances, a seemingly inconsequential event, such as the movement of a butterfly or group of butterflies, might change weather in a significant and unpredictable way. Just as in the fields of pharmacy or medicine, the process of collecting raw data, interpreting its meaning, and delivering findings to its ultimate user is complicated in biometeorology. On a large scale, biometeorologists use satellite and sophisticated computer models called general circulation models to track weather patterns around the world. Ocean temperatures can be read by satellite. The atmosphere behaves as a fluid, and the laws of fluid dynamics can be applied. Doppler radar is also used to locate precipitation, determine its intensity, and to define its direction and rotation if present, such as in a tornado. So just as medical researchers require absolute measures when gathering data, biometeorologists look at temperature, humidity, the number of sunshine hours, wind speed, precipitation, and geomagnetic activity. In addition, they look at the rate of change of each of these factors. Biomedical researchers sometimes find that an abnormal lab value doesn't necessarily manifest itself as a changed clinical picture, Similarly, biometeorologists have found that there is sometimes no substitute for human ground spotters. These weather diagnosticians observe local weather and fine-tune information through visual confirmation and direct observation of storms, tornadoes, or wind direction. So let's take a look at weather events and health effects. So it's already well established that during periods of stormy weather, localities and individuals, including long-term care populations, are challenged by a number of factors. Storms, which include heavy rains, snow, or winds, cause tremendous damage on the local level and hardship for long-term care facilities and residents. Obvious complications include accidental injury or death, which requires greater emergency and disaster readiness by staff. Most certifying and accrediting bodies require a certain level of preparedness in long-term care facilities, and pharmacists are essential members of the team that develops the facility's plan. Put it another way, if you're going to prepare for weather upset the way they do in nursing homes, then you ought to do it in your own local home. Considerations in the long-term care facility should include how to maintain infection control, procedures if the water supply fails, and how to safeguard food, medication, and supplies that require refrigeration if electricity fails. Translated into English, that means if you have a Hurricane Katrina which knocks out your power and you have diabetes, you better have another way of preserving your insulin. In other words, boys and girls, it's preparedness, isn't it? Preparedness. If we're going to have, irrespective of whether or not God created and causes Hurricane Katrinas, or they just occur sporadically by happenstance, if in fact they're going to become more numerous because of global warming, then if the long care facilities, if the nursing homes need to make greater precautions and take greater preparation, or I should reword that, if they should make greater preparation and take greater precautions in the future, shouldn't you also? And you people down on the Gulf Coast, now that you're rebuilding your houses in Biloxi and Bay St. Louis and New Orleans, don't you think you better be better prepared? Because as the temperatures warm, the next hurricanes that come are going to be stronger. I mean, we'll be talking about Category 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 hurricanes here one of these days. And by the way, as you read through the book of Revelation and you get into the three woes and so on down the line, did you notice that it gets worse and worse as time progresses? It doesn't start off, you know, you get the worst of the seven last plagues, you know, all on day one. No, it comes on you slowly but surely, you know, little by little. God says, I'm going to lean on you just a little at a time. Considerations in the long-term care facility. Don't you think you should have the same considerations in your own home? Many facilities are reviving their emergency preparedness procedures as part of efforts to prevent year 2000 computer glitches. While Y2K readiness exercises had been time-consuming and meticulous, they will help only as a preventive measure for any Y2K failure, but also help to improve disaster plans. Remember Y2K that didn't materialize? But what if it had materialized? Only a few people were prepared for it. I remember during this 1999, I laid in some extra food and clothes and one thing and another, because I said, well, if the computers go down for 30 days, we're going to be in big trouble. Fortunately, the computers didn't go down for 30 days, and everything went on just fine. Well, let me point this out. What if the grid went down for 30 days? Can you imagine America with the grid down for 30 days? You talk about anarchy. You talk about chaos. You talk about disaster. 30 days without electricity in America. There will be death and destruction beyond anything that we could imagine. Probably most of it by riots and opportunists, but just not being able to cool yourself in the summer or warm yourself in the winter is going to produce a lot of death and destruction. Shouldn't you be prepared for that? You know, Americans used to be prepared. Today, we don't prepare for anything. I mentioned this concerning food. When I was a kid, back in the 1930s and 40s, you know, this is the period of America when we were self-sufficient, coming out of the Great Depression. During World War II, for instance, we all had a year's worth of food in our pantries. I can't remember anybody that didn't have a pantry, and I don't know of anybody when I was a kid growing up that didn't have the pantry full of food, at least once a year. Starting about 1950, the pantry thing disappeared with the coming of Canham's Supermarkets in Eureka, California. Canham's had three markets. Safeway moved in, and they put up big supermarkets. And why would we want to can? Why would we want to store food? Why would we want to prepare anything for the future when we can just go down to the grocery store and buy it? So through the 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s and 90s and now we're here in the 21st century, Americans have gotten to the point where we can't can. My wife is out collecting canning jars, you know. People are giving her canning jars. She was out the other day, and this guy gave her about, I don't know, 100 canning jars free. Just get them out of here. Help me clean up the mess. They're worth about a dollar a jar when you go to the store and buy them. That's how prepared Americans are. I don't think the average American housewife today could can. I don't think they would know what to do if they had tomatoes or peppers or carrots or peas or something out of a garden. If you handed them to them, I don't think they'd know what to do with them. I know this, if you gave somebody in New York City a live chicken, he'd make a pet out of it and starve to death. He wouldn't have a clue. If this thing isn't prepared as chicken McNuggets, the guy wouldn't have a clue as to what to do with it. People like that don't need to prepare for anything because they're already as good as dead in any emergency. And this is why I said, you're going to have chaos because these people starving to death, not knowing how to feed themselves, having never made any preparations, will have no other alternative but to steal from their neighbors. It'll just be a jungle. It'll be chaos. You saw it down in New Orleans. Remember in New Orleans? You had all these people running into the Walmart store. They weren't stealing water. They weren't stealing food. They were stealing vacuum cleaners and television sets. Here you are in the middle of a flood and you're stealing television sets. You talk about no-brainers and no brains. And there's more to come, but time's up, and we got to leave it right there. We'll conclude this in the next program when we come back on weather and how it affects human beings, especially human health, next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. All right, you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. And remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. I'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.